Good morning, all. Before we begin our proceedings, this is kind of unusual for us, so we're sitting in a different venue as we do once a year. So on behalf of the panel, I just wanted to express our gratitude to the Circuit Court and the District Court and all of their judges and all of their administrative staff who have been so helpful in accommodating us today. So thank you to them. And thank you for the advocates, some of whom had to travel maybe a little farther than they usually would to get to an argument in our court. The first argument this morning is 18-1183, Delisio v. Wilkie. Mr. Porco, whenever you're ready. Did I mispronounce your name?
You said it correct, Your Honor. All right. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Chris Raldo Porco here on behalf of the appellant. Thank you for this opportunity to be here. It's a privilege to be here to be before you today to represent Mr. Delisio in what is now nearly four decades after he filed his initial claim in 1980 for VA disability benefits due to his military service, including disabilities caused by his exposure to Agent Orange, as well as a motor vehicle accident incurred in service. And this is now five decades after his service in Vietnam in the late 60s.
I understand the frustration, and we see it in all these cases, but at least in your client's case, at least, he's had some success in his travels up and down the system, right? So tell us what you're seeking today that he hasn't yet been successful in attaining.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I'm certainly not here to restate what's already been submitted in the briefs and all that, but I would like to obviously clarify certain arguments and respond to some made by the appellee, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And you're right, he has... He does receive VA disability benefits. As you put it, he's received some success, but there's still a bit of a gap as far as when his initial claim was filed to the date he was granted 100% disability benefits. I believe he's service-connected 100% back to 88, if I remember correctly. And again, his initial claim was 1980. And what was before the Veterans Court back in 2011 was this 1980 claim, which was never adjudicated. That was remanded. That went to the board, and that's what's before the court today.
Counselor, looking at what issues are left and the ones you presented to the court today, I'm having a hard time seeing that we actually have jurisdiction in this case. And it seems to me that you're raising the issue of the adequacy of a medical report. And the question I have related to that is that's a question of fact. And you're asking us to simply reweigh the facts that have already been determined below.
Well, Your Honor, in regards to that, in regards to the jurisdictional question, whether or not this court has jurisdiction, obviously that is a predominant question here. What I'd like to turn the court's attention to on that matter is its reliance on Neves Rodriguez. It's the appendix at page 3 where the Veterans Court is stating that it has never required VA medical examiners to perform a complete review of the entire claims file or state they've done so in every instance. So what we're saying here before this court is that the Veterans Court misconstrues the law and what is required, and in particular with Neves Rodriguez, the operative words in that is in every instance. So what the Veterans Court is saying is that since it doesn't require that in every case, that it's never required. And that's one of the legal issues we're...
So you're saying they were wrong on that statement is incorrect as a matter of law because the law requires that they provide a complete review of the entire claim and state that they have done so?
What we're arguing, Your Honor, is that the Veterans Court is relying on Neves Rodriguez to say that it doesn't require a medical examiner to state in every instance they've reviewed the entire claims file. What we're arguing is that's a misinterpretation of the law in that there are instances in which a review of the entire record is required.
And now, in those instances, are you saying that under particular factual circumstances, they should have to look at the entire record?
Well,
that's how I read your brief, because, for example, on the bottom page 16, you talk about the facts of this case support a requirement that the VA medical examiner must do a complete review of the claim.
Well, and I believe I may be seeing where you're going there, Your Honor. That's applying the law to the facts, which is also not something that the court has jurisdiction for. I guess what I'm predominantly arguing is that there is a requirement in some instances for the VA medical examiner to review the entire claims file.
Where are those instances?
Well, again, that's a hypothetical, of course, and that's going beyond.
Not a hypothetical, because you're asking us to rule in this case that there should have been a complete review and that your case is one where a complete review should have occurred. So what are the circumstances you're talking about?
Sure. Well, in this particular instance, and I've mentioned it in the briefs, that the claims file is over 9,000 pages long. There's a lot of medical history there. There's a lot of lay statements from the veteran. So we've seen in the VA medical examiner opinions, and there are several of them that were after the most recent remand from the Veterans Court. We see some of the documents they reference, but we don't know if they actually reviewed all of those lay statements by the veteran.
I mean, there are potentially two issues here. One is, have they actually reviewed the stuff? They didn't say, we haven't reviewed the entire claim. I thought the other piece of this is really not whether or not they've actually reviewed it, but whether or not they have to state that they've actually reviewed it. You know, we'll write an opinion, maybe on this case, and we wouldn't state routinely, and we've reviewed every single document in this record. We just don't say that. I think everyone assumes that we've probably or likely done that, at least with respect to the relevant documentation. So I think in this case, it's not even a matter that you know that they haven't looked at it. It's just that you want them to say affirmatively, we have looked at every single document. And I don't know, where does that requirement come from?
Well, again, just looking at the Neves-Rodriguez case, it talks about that it's not required to state in every case that there's been a complete review. So just by going with that, there's an
Or state that they have done so in every instance.
Again, in every instance, the operative word. So there's an inference there that it's not required in every instance to review or state that you've reviewed the entire claims file. So just again,
and that's because of the underlying facts of the particular cases, right?
Well, of course, each case would be,
and those are factual findings, and they're outside our jurisdiction.
It's outside this court's jurisdiction. Yes, Your Honor, it's outside this court's jurisdiction whether or not, in this particular case, that the VA medical examiner should have reviewed the entire claims file. But again, that's applying law to the facts. I'm just saying, just based on the legal argument alone, that the VA medical examiner is required to state that they've reviewed the entire claims file. So that is an issue.
You agree, though, that you're saying that the VA medical examiners have to perform a complete review and state that they have done so in some circumstances, right?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Your Honor?
Do I understand correctly that your position is that the VA medical examiners have to perform a complete review or state as much in particular circumstances?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then what is wrong with the in every instance language that you've identified?
Well, what is wrong is that the Veterans Court here uses that, misconstrues it to say that it's not required in every instance, that it's never required. So that's the legal issue that we're arguing today, is that how the Veterans Court interpreted those words in this case.
Can I ask you about, there's another issue in this case that you've raised, and the government, I think,'s position is that you waived it, but it has to do with noncompliance with the remand order here. So why don't you first take on why that isn't waived? In other words, can you identify where it was raised in the record below? And two, if it was, talk about the merits of that.
Are you talking about where it was raised in the most recent Veterans Court case?
Yeah.
I don't have the Veterans Court briefs in front of me, but I do believe that issue was raised at that level.
So how do you think they failed to, just leaving that aside for a moment, how did they fail, the board failed to, or you're saying the board failed to comply with the previous remand by the CAVC, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
How so?
A lot of it does hinge on this, the inadequate medical examinations and what was required
Is that the same issue? Does that align with the issue we've just been discussing about whether or not the board stated that they had reviewed the entire file?
It is very similar, Your Honor, yes. Yes.
So, counsel, you really don't know whether the entire medical file was reviewed or not.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Your Honor. Without the VA medical examiner stating that, we don't know that. So that's why that declarative statement is helpful to know exactly whether or not they did review it. I mean, otherwise we're speculating that they reviewed it or not. And I understand, Your Honor, you're saying you don't, in your opinion, say, well, you've reviewed all of the documents before the court. It's assumed you have. But in this particular instance, in this particular...
It seems to me that you can make that argument in all cases. You know, you can say, well, the opinion doesn't go into this particular area, and because of that reason, I don't think that the court reviewed or that part of the file was ever actually reviewed.
And Your Honor, that goes to the crux of the problem. We don't know what the VA medical examiner reviewed.
You're pitching a speculation to the court.
Well, Your Honor, the speculation is what the VA medical examiner reviewed, and we don't know that without them stating that they...
Well, isn't there some sort of presumption of validity? I mean, in some of our opinions, for example, we will put in at the end, if we think of it, and we've considered all the other appellant arguments and find them unpersuasive. Sometimes we do that. Sometimes we don't. But I think we're assuming that everyone assumes that we've reviewed all of the issues before us and considered that and reached our resolution. So I guess I'm having a hard time. You're advocating what would be a rule, which is the CAVC, the Veterans Appeals, has to state affirmatively that they've reviewed it. We don't accept that they've reviewed the relevant material. They have to state it. If not, we send it back. Right? That's what you're saying?
Well, Your Honor, what we're saying is that the VA medical examiner is required to, at least in certain circumstances, review the entire claims file, and that in those circumstances they have to state they've done so. And that is what the Veterans Court even said, basically.
What they have to do, and I think we would all agree, is they have to consider the issues and they have to give a reasons and bases for deciding one way and not the other. And you can argue whether they've done that or not here, but I think it's likely that they have, or that at least it's not reviewable by us and the CAVC thought they had, right?
Well, even from what you're asking, Your Honor, I believe that still goes into speculation of what they have and have not reviewed. But I see that I'm in my rebuttal time, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So for now, I'll defer to counsel.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This Court lacks jurisdiction over Mr. Delisio's appeal because the only thing he's challenging is the factual determinations by the Board, or at the very most, the application of law to fact by the Veterans Court. As this Court has pointed out, the determination of whether a medical opinion is adequate or not is a factual determination that the Board makes in the first instance and the Veterans Court reviews for clear error. Under 38 U.S.C. 7292, this court does not review that. And all of the challenges that Mr. Delisio raises go to the adequacy of the medical opinions.
What about the reliance on the Neves-Rodriguez case, and in particular the argument we heard today that the board used the quote that in its opinion at page Appendix 3, used that quote to suggest that it's never, that the VA medical examiner never has to indicate that they've performed a complete review of the entire claims?
I think, let me make sure I understand Your Honor's question.
Want to hear your response to the appellant's legal argument. He says he made a legal argument this morning. I want to hear your response to why that's not legal, or why it is that the board did not, or the Court of Veterans Appeals did not do what the appellant has said that it did.
Well, I disagree with Mr. Delisio's argument that the court misconstrued the law in either Neves-Rodriguez or in at Appendix 3. There is no requirement that the medical examiner state affirmatively that they've reviewed the entire claims file. And I don't think this opinion at Appendix 3 can be read to say that. You're never required to say that. I mean, the medical opinion, I think there's no magic words that it needs to use, and there's no statutory or regulatory...
There's no requirement. How are we assured that relevant facts have been reviewed?
Well, Your Honor, the test for the adequacy of review is by looking at what evidence there is in the record that cuts counter to the conclusions that were drawn. And here, Mr. Delizio does not identify anything in the record that would suggest that the medical examiners omitted a review of something or misunderstood some medical evidence or misapplied it. He only says that they did not review the entire claims file, but he does not point to any single bit of information that should have, in his opinion, gone the other way or changed the medical opinions. Mr. Delizio had the medical opinions here after they were issued. He was given, he was sent a letter with attaching these opinions and saying, you know, you're free to submit any evidence, any argument you wish. He didn't do that. He still hasn't identified anything that would suggest that there's been an inadequate review here by the medical professional.
Well, he complains that they didn't talk to his client, right?
He does, Your Honor. But aside from that general statement, he doesn't identify anything that his client would have said that would have made a difference. And
does he have to do that when he's limited to arguing legal errors or constitutional errors before this court?
Well, exactly, Your Honor. That would be a factual determination. I think that would be unreviewable by this court. But he didn't argue that below either. He didn't argue to the Veterans Court where he could challenge the factual determinations to say that, you know, if only my client had the ability to speak with medical examiners, he would have provided this additional information that now undermines the validity of those two medical opinions. And the medical opinions here, they're both in the record at Appendix 150 and 153, both state that they have reviewed the medical records. And neither states that there's anything missing or something that precluded review by the two medical professionals that they weren't able to find or get their hands on. So there's no indication here, even if this court were to reach the factual determination, which this court is precluded by statute from doing, there's no indication here, in the record that the review was inadequate. The claims file, it contains a lot of extraneous information. It contains non-medical information. It contains medical information pertaining to other ailments. There's no requirement that medical professionals have to pour through entire 9,000-page records to render a medical opinion, especially when they've both stated that they...
If a veteran raises an issue on a specific, let's say, medical condition, and his argument or his position is just limited to that one particular issue, and the decision doesn't say anything about the medical examiner having reviewed the portion of the medical record that covers that specific issue, then why wouldn't we require that a decision that does not say I reviewed that portion of the medical record, why should we not find that that's deficient?
Well, at the outset, because that's a factual determination. And as this court has said repeatedly, the weighing of the evaluation and weighing of evidence and drawing inferences from those are factual determinations. But I think to Your Honor's point, if there was something, if the veteran had raised a specific medical issue and the medical opinion didn't address that, that may be something that the Veterans Court could, under its clear error standard, remand back and say this is an inadequate medical opinion. Certainly this court cannot do that as a jurisdictional bar. But that's not this case here. There's not anything that Mr. Delizio has identified that the medical examiners didn't address. And I think even if this court were to reach the factual issues, that still dooms Mr. Delizio's claim. Now, I'd just like to briefly touch the issue of compliance with the remand
order. Why would our review of the sufficiency of a decision be a factual issue?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why would our review of the sufficiency of a decision be a factual inquiry?
It would be the application of law to fact. You'd be applying the legal standard for the sufficiency of a medical opinion to what actually happened here, and that is also beyond this court's jurisdiction. So unless there is some error of law, and I suppose Mr. Delisio could make the argument that there's a requirement that every medical opinion has to state that the examiner reviewed the whole claims file.
I mean, I think we established that that's not the case, that
right.
every medical, and we've also established, just talking with you, we've established there are instances where the decision should say we reviewed or the examiner reviewed that portion of the, well, where are we in this particular case? You're saying he's not pointing to a particular issue that was not examined.
That's correct. And I think going back to your hypothetical, Judge Reyna, you were saying if a veteran presented a specific medical issue and the medical opinion didn't address that, then he could point and say, look, I specifically mentioned issue X. The opinion didn't address issue X. I think it's deficient. And either the board or the veterans court could address that factual determination and review that factual determination for clear error. This court, however, is under its jurisdictional limit, is precluded from then reweighing that application and saying, well, you know, in this particular case, the veteran addressed issue, wanted issue X addressed, but that wasn't addressed. And Mr. Delisio faces the same jurisdictional bar on the compliance with the remand order. Again, that's at the very most an application of law to fact. And moreover, he does not identify any factual area of noncompliance. He just sort of says that, you know, the board didn't comply with the remand order, but he doesn't state how. Even if he did, that would not be an issue that this court could review. If this court has no further questions, I'm happy to yield the rest of my time, and we respectfully request that the opinion be affirmed.
Thank you.
Your Honor, it's just a couple points to address here on rebuttal. And it was actually, I think, also asked to me during my initial segment of a waiver of any arguments. And I just looked at my brief in the Veterans Court. There were four issues raised in the Veterans Court, which are very similar to the four raised today. Whether or not the VA medical exam was adequate, whether or not the board had adequate reasons or bases for its decision, whether or not the board failed to comply with the prior remand, and whether or not there was prejudicial error. So all the arguments before you today were also before the Veterans Court. So as far as a waiver, there is no waiver. Also would like to address one of the things mentioned by the Secretary about whether or not Mr. Delisio has identified any documents or anything that should support his claim that was not reviewed by the VA medical examiner. And I believe, Your Honor, Judge Stoll, you were point on when you said, since this court can't review factual disputes, why should he? And that's exactly what Mr. Delisio is arguing. It's not his responsibility to state what the VA medical examiner should have considered that the VA medical examiner did not consider. We're, again, focused on just the legal argument that the VA medical examiner never stated whether or not they reviewed the entire claims file, so the veteran can't know what was and what was not considered. One other thing I would like to point out, and it was mentioned in the brief and the case history, is that the veteran did submit a letter to the VA in 2015. I can't remember the exact month, but a letter was submitted to the VA that he had moved from Nevada to Pittsburgh at least a couple years prior. So the medical opinions obtained in 2014 were obtained. Any notices sent to the veteran were sent to the wrong address. And I don't know if the veteran had called the VA prior to that letter in 2015 to notify them of his new address or if there was mail forwarding and whatnot. But as to any sort of opportunity he may have had prior to those medical opinions being rendered to submit anything, he was completely unaware of that because...
But you appreciate, I assume, that we're not in a position to review that. I mean, there's a presumption of soundness, and we're not in a position to adjudicate whether or not he received or didn't receive that mail. Right?
Understood, Your Honor. That was just in response to the appellee secretary's arguments that the veteran had an opportunity to submit some sort of additional documentation. And this is a case where it would have been very prudent and helpful for that VA medical examiner to have actually sat down with the veteran. If the medical examiner didn't want to review 9,000 pages in his claims file, this would have been an appropriate case to have the veteran before that VA medical examiner to more clearly articulate his service-connected injuries and how they relate to his military service.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We thank both sides, and the case is submitted. Thank you.